When someone in your family is going through depression, it's hard to know what to say, and I said everything wrong. I'm Sam. Our family went through it, and I just kept saying, come on, let's get it together. The thing I should have been saying is, let's get you to the center, a place of hope. It's a place for you or a place for someone you love who's struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, eating disorders. So many success stories. It's personal to me. They've actually saved the lives of people I love. If you felt like, I don't know what to do to dig out of this really dark place, and you've tried everything and you can't think of what to do next, make a phone call right now. Call the Center, a Place of Hope.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, a Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Jim Kress, and on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help AACC equip the church and provide Christian mental health care to those in need, visit aaccfoundation.org to donate. Your gift will ensure that this program and your station remain on the air. Now, let's join our host, Zach Clinton.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'll be your host today, Zach Clinton. And as we keep charging into the new year, where many of us have big dreams, goals, and resolutions for 2025, I think it's important for us to be reminded that anything worth valuing in this life comes at a cost. Today, we're joined by someone who understands that cost, someone who understands sacrifice, discipline, and mental toughness that can help turn your commitments into consistency. His name is Chad Robichaud. Chad is a highly decorated former Force Recon Marine and Department of Defense contractor with 8 deployments to Afghanistan as part of a Joint Special Operations Command task force. After overcoming his personal battles with PTSD and nearly becoming a veteran suicide statistic, Chad founded the Mighty Oaks Foundation, a leading nonprofit serving the active duty, military veteran, and first responder communities around the world with highly successful faith-based combat trauma and resiliency programs. Again, he's a man who understands what resilience is really all about. Chad, my friend, thank you so much for joining us again today.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
I'm always so grateful every time we get the opportunity to connect because I always glean so much from your wealth of wisdom and knowledge and experience. But when I look at you, I don't just see you as a friend. I view you as a modern day warrior, truly a hero, somebody who understands, like I said, sacrifice and discipline. You're somebody who's not only battled on the front lines in the octagon, fought through personal challenges and difficulties, as well as against the principalities, powers, and darkness spiritually that Ephesians 6:12 talks about. You are truly a fighter. And as we head into a new year, Chad, I think it's important to have conversations like this around topics like discipline and mental toughness, because there are a lot of our audience members who they have goals, they have dreams, they have resolutions. And I want to hear up front from you, what is it like for you? What's your approach as you head into a new year? Do you make goals and resolutions? Do you focus on one word? What's that look like?
Yeah, I actually always have like these ongoing goals and tasks. I'm pretty like goal or task focused person. So January 1st doesn't change that for me. I know a lot of people do, and I think that's really good if you need a mile marker to do that. For me, it's ongoing. I will, you know, January 1st, I probably reestablish a lot of the goals and tasks, not because it's January 1st, but usually because December is the month I slow down. So it gives me time to recalibrate myself. I think for me, like this year, I specifically feel a need to be more focused on my spiritual foundation. I'm not saying that because I'm on the show. For me, I get really busy because I'm very task oriented. My priorities slip at times, and and I get more busy in the work and ministry and serving God than I do in my personal relationship with God. And that seems to be like an ongoing theme in my life that it's kind of like running in the same parallel, like my relationship with God and the work I'm doing for God. And then at some point, because I'm just so task driven, that relationship with God kind of falls off and I'm just doing more of the work. And I wouldn't say every year, but there's times that I kind of catch myself and recalibrate. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. So right now, overall, the goals and things I have, and I have a lot of big projects coming up and a lot of things that I want to have on my New Year's resolution list. It's just seeking the face of God and coming back to a place to where I have just a really strong, personal, heart-to-heart connection with God. Because that, to me, when I have that, that's when I seem to be most successful anyway. And so if that's off, like all my other goals and stuff doesn't matter, because if that's off, I'll be off.
Amen to that, my friend. As you mentioned, there's so many of us that have goals. And like you said, whether we it's a day-to-day process, we want to carry over the momentum that we created in 2024 and years prior, but also we just want to keep on kind of reinstating those things come January 1st. A lot of the goals out there, I mean, health when it comes to physical and mental health, budgeting, financial wealth, growing in our spiritual and intimate relationship with Christ and our relationships with others here on this earth, all of those things are great goals, great resolutions to have. But Chad, you know, as you mentioned, sometimes it can be very difficult to follow through with the commitments that we make. Research shows, statistics show, 90% of New Year's resolutions go unmet throughout the year. 50% of those actually are given up on by the second Friday in January. Many have actually recognized the second Friday in January. They've recognized it as Quitter's Day. Chad, that hurts my heart, man. Why? I want to ask you this. Obviously, you mentioned busyness, but what are some of the other contributing factors as to why you believe so many of us quit and are so quick to give in?
It's innate inside of us. God created us this way that we want to have, we have a desire for improvement. We're not content, people, because we're not content because we know innately that we fall short of what we were created to be. So we're always seeking the self-improvement. We don't know why, right? But that is why. It's because God created us for this greatness that we don't live up to. So we're constantly seeking. And so when we get to these moments in life where we either or hit a moment of conviction, or like maybe a salvation, or January 1st, where we recognize that. And so this overwhelming motivation, desire to be better leads us to make a big and audacious goal. And we don't have, one, we make a goal that maybe is too big and too audacious, and we don't have a plan for that goal to actually. And so it becomes something that we committed to in a moment of motivation or inspiration. And then it becomes unattainable because of the way we either overcommitted or didn't have a plan to execute it. And so that's why I think you see, I think 40% of Americans at least are New Year's resolutioners. And like you said, I think it's in the high 90 percentiles that never complete it. And then, you know, 50% by 2 weeks in or not completing it. That's the reason why. And so I always say, if you are going to set a goal, whether it's January 1st or a new believer or just a wake-up call, a decision you're going to make, make it tangible. It doesn't mean you can't have a big audacious goal, but the first phase of it shouldn't be something that's so outrageous. Make it tangible, make it bite-sized, and then have a plan to get there. You know, saying something like, I'm going to be a better man, that's pretty big.
It's pretty
broad. It sounds simple, right? That's pretty broad. It's pretty big, right? But I'm going to learn how to be more responsible with my time, to put this down, right? I'm going to put this down at 6 o'clock every day. Because that's going to let me be a better husband, better father, learn to have control my language in my home. Those are things that are like bite size and that you could commit to and actually achieve. And it's easier to hold yourself accountable. And then I think when it comes to plan, you know, have a plan, have some steps, have some milestones. By this date, I should be able to have achieved this. And then also accountability is super important. It's very important to me. If I make a plan, if I make a goal, I have to have an accountability partner. Like, hey, Zach, I just made this goal. Like, I'm asking you as a brother, like, even if we don't live next to each other, can you send me a text once a week and ask me how I'm doing with that? And have that accountability. And those things, you know, putting those things in place help you to not be part of that 99% of people that lose those goals. But man, like I said, every year they're like, I'm going to lose 100 pounds and I'm going to run a marathon every month. And people make some crazy goals and they just don't achieve them because it's real easy to do that in that moment. You know, steps, bite-sized steps.
Exactly. No, I love what you're saying. Have tangible, realistic goals. Come up with a plan or a strategy to get there, but then also surround yourself with the right people for accountability to make sure that they're pushing you in the direction of those goals as well. One thing, the reality, though, is that setbacks happen, right? Hardship, suffering, challenge, pain. It's inevitable in this life, Chad. One thing that you and I both recognize, though, and what we have a passion around is really just infusing resilience into those we have the opportunity of interacting with. Resilience, as I've done my research, is positive adaptation in the presence of adversity. You have a show called The Resilient Show. You've spent a lot of time with some of the most highly effective leaders in our day and age. And I want to ask you, what have you learned about resilience? What are some of the lessons? And how can we begin to infuse resilience within our own lives?
Yeah, so on the show, my New Year's episode, I interviewed Jocko Willink, and Jocko is like the discipline guy. Like, if you're talking about goal setting, Jocko is like the guy for that. And so I even tried to push Jocko a little bit, like, hey, like, you're a retired, lieutenant commander in the Navy. You have a Silver Star. You have a good retirement. You have successful businesses. Is it tangible for the guy who's working three jobs just to put food on the table? There's a difference there between his lifestyle and other people's. And he's like, and one of the things is you could always do something, right? And that's that bite-sized thing. So really, at that interview, we spoke for an hour just on this subject. And he gave some really insight. Some things I thought, I've been knowing him for a long time, but I consider him a friend. And I think some things I thought I might stump him on, he had some really good answers. But even more so, as I have an episode out this week, and it's not anybody famous. It's just three commanders of Ukrainian forces. And they've been, these all three of these guys are in the front lines. They've suffered tremendous loss. One of them lost half of his unit was killed. The surviving two-thirds were captured. He was in captivity with the Russians for 5 months. Just some incredibly resilient men. And we talked about the subject of resiliency. And one of the guys gave a really great answer. He said resiliency, people look at it as tough and hard, but he believes that resiliency is flexibility, being able to adapt to circumstances. God is with the flexible and people that are able to adapt. And the Ukrainian people, this first world nation, that were going to pizza parlors and ice cream shops, taking their kids to the movie theater. And overnight, you had the first world country coming in and firing ballistic missiles the size of telephone poles on the side of apartment buildings and killing millions of civilians. So they've had to be flexible in their resilience and ability to be able to maintain their way of life, stay in this fight as a small nation against a world superpower, has been their resilience and their flexibility. And just these last two episodes of interviewing those three individuals and Jocko, there's some really good insights in there on resiliency. The way I break out resiliency in the show, and by the way, not only in the show, but I've spoken to over 500,000 active duty troops on bases, real estate base around the world on the subject of resiliency. I really break it down into four pillars, foundational pillars: mind, body, spirit, and social. So to be holistically resilient, you have to be mentally tough. You have to have a right attitude, a right state of mind. You have a really good perspective, worldview. And I believe the best worldview comes from, biblical worldview. So your mind has to be in a solid place. Your body, you have to be physically healthy, whether it means that doesn't mean in the gym strong. It means, taking care of your body, eating healthy, putting the right nutrients in your body, being hydrated, your body, socially surrounding yourself with the right people. Not everybody can pick who they work with, but you can certainly pick who you let speak into and influence your life. And then spiritually, having a strong spiritual foundation. I believe being resilient means being intentional about those four pillars, and starts off being honest about those pillars in your life, where you're strong and where you're weak. So like, is a real inventory of myself saying, hey, am I where I want to be mentally? Do I have the right attitude? Do I have the right mindset? Am I where I need to be physically? Am I physically healthy? Am I healthy, like inside, like strength wise, and both nutritionally and physically? Am I healthy? Socially, am I surrounding myself with the right people? If I'm in circles of people that have like mixed influence and mixed worldviews, like who's influencing who? Are they? I'm allowing them to influence me, or am I influencing them? And then spiritually, where I'm at with my spiritual foundation through my relationship with Jesus. Like, those four things are super important. And if I'm honest about myself and I'm weak in any of those areas, then I have to have an intentional plan to strengthen where I'm weak. When I speak a lot, I'll typically grab like a four-legged chair and pull it up in front of me, and I say, those four pillars are represented in the four legs of this chair. And if each one of those mind, body, spirit, social, if one of these legs were weak, the chair by itself would stay standing. It wouldn't collapse. It would stay standing. But as soon as you sat in it, as soon as you put weight on it, if one of those legs were weak, it would break and you go crashing down. And I think that's our life, right? We could put up the front that we're strong in all four of these pillars, but as soon as the weight of life and circumstances, trauma, compressing down on it, if one of those legs are weak, that's the one that'll break and we'll go crashing down. So we don't wait until one of those break to fix it. That's what we typically do, but we shouldn't wait till one of those break to fix it. We should be preemptive on the front end of making sure that our pillars are strong. We shouldn't wait for a circumstance to break one of those pillars and our life to go crashing down. We should be aware enough to say, I'm going to do an honest inventory of myself. We know ourselves better than anyone. Where am I weak? Where do I need to be intentional about fixing it? And so when you're setting goals, I mean, that's why I don't like these trendy goals. And by the way, Jocko, in his episode, he has a great one, right? But I don't like these trendy goals because now you're just doing what everybody else is doing. It may not be where you need it most. And like I said, for me, there's some other things that goals I'd like to have. But I know for me, my weakest pillar right now in the four pillars of those things is my spiritual pillar. And I'll say that honestly here in a Christian show and I run a ministry. That's my weakest pillar right now. I'm self-aware of that. I mean, it's great if my friends tell me, but I know that. And so where do I need to be intentional about? That's there I need to be intentional about.
Exactly. Being proactive, right? Really preparing for those difficult times, right? Expecting the best, preparing for the worst type of mindset. But like you said, I appreciate your vulnerability.
Right? That's being resilient. Being resilient
that's
means
being resilient.
Prepared.
Exactly. Being prepared. And I appreciate your vulnerability just even mentioning, right, that is like your weakest pillar right now. But I love this idea about holistic health. I love this idea about preparation, this idea about resiliency. I grew up in a family, a long lineage of warriors, of soldiers. My dad taught me at a very young age that freedom is not free. That's why I have such a deep love, appreciation, and respect for you, for all those who have served and all those who currently are and will serve in the United States Armed Forces. But then in recognizing that I listened to that conversation with you Jocko, by the way. It was encouraging. It was challenging, my friend. I loved it because there's this idea that Jocko talks a lot about and you really pushed him on and you kind of dove into is that he always says discipline equals freedom. And you know, not only is that important to recognize because I think it gives us a greater understanding and appreciation for those who have served and who do serve, but also it gives us a better understanding of what that looks like in our own personal lives because anything worth valuing in this life really does come at a cost. Chad, speak to the importance of recognizing that discipline actually isn't limiting, but it's actually opening up different opportunities for you that are more meaningful and that are more, in a sense, God-centered and truth-filled to be able to experience the freedom in which God created us for in this life.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people look at discipline as like a chore, like a task, and really it's a weight that's lifted off, right? You're going to suffer in life. Like this is a broken, fallen world. Like, so in this hard world that we live in, you're going to suffer one of two types of things. You're going to suffer the pain and suffering of a discipline, or you're going to suffer the pain and suffering of regret. So I'd rather pick the one, and I'd rather deal with the pain of discipline than the pain of regret, because regret's something you can't change, you can't get back. But discipline, and that's where we talk about being on the front end. Like being on the front end. That's where resiliency means being on the front end. Like as a special operator, like as a Force Recon Marine, like we don't go out on operation and like, what do we do if we get a forward ambush? I don't know. We'll figure it out when it happens. We'll call a combat timeout. We'll figure it out. Of course not. No, we know exactly what we're going to do. We prepared in advance for it. We were intentional about that situation. Said, this is a threat. This could happen. So let's train for it. Let's have the discipline to train for it, prepare for the scenario. And by the way, we rehearse it like 100 times. That when it happens, we don't have to think about it. And that's how we treat, like, that, in my job, that's how we would treat something like that. In everybody's professional life, they have something that they do like that, the discipline of that, a preparation. So that's the pain, the discipline, the suffer of preparing. Like, we have to take time, we have to take energy, we know we feel like doing it, it's going to be hard, it's going to be, but when that scenario presents itself, we survive, right? There's no regret. Have we not prepared for that? Buddies are going to die. People are going to die. The mission is going to be a failure. There's massive regret there. But if we had the discipline in the front end, like, and that's the same in our life, man. Like, you know, if we aren't intentional and put discipline into our marriage, our family, our relationship with Christ, we don't put discipline into our work life, like all the things that we do, then the consequence is there's going to be failures in that, and there's going to be regret. So you're going to have the suffering of the discipline. You got the suffering of regret. So for me, when you talk about the word discipline, it sounds to people like, I don't want to live a different life. That's hard. Well, it's actually, if you, in the grand scheme of things, it's not as hard as the opposite. And you're going to get one of those things. You're going to have regret. I mean, man, I've only been out of shape to where I consider myself out of shape like two or three times in my life. And my out of shape is probably not compared to a lot of people out of shape, because I'm always like, because I just can't take it. I feel like terrible. But like just like traveling or in deployments, like I'm stuck overseas and I can't work out, I can't eat well, and I come back, I'm like, oh man, I feel so out of shape. I couldn't imagine like what it feels like to wake up one day and be like, it's hard for me to like get up and walk to the mailbox. That to me, the regret of that, the pain of that, living in that state of life of how could that be any easier than the discipline it takes to wake up every morning and go for a 1 hour walk. I'd much rather the discipline that comes on the front end and to suffer the discipline of a disciplined lifestyle than suffer regret.
That's right. And when you choose the pain of discipline, you have on the opposite side of the door, how I always say it, is like there's a reward and there's regret, right? When you choose discipline, you can experience the pain of reward. But when you neglect discipline, you naturally will more than likely end up experiencing the pain of regret. Hey, Chad, I know we're fighting time here for a second, but I just wanted to ask, because I'm loving the conversation so much, is there any chance that you'd be willing to join us again for day two tomorrow's as we keep on unpacking your story?
Absolutely, man. Let's do it.
But Chad, to the person out there today who maybe feels pretty isolated, maybe feels discouraged, maybe is really struggling with being vulnerable. They view vulnerability as a weakness and not a strength. Where do they begin? Do they begin with mentorship? Do they begin by seeking and asking for help, counseling? What would you say are some good first steps for them as we close out our time together today?
Yeah, well, first of all, you said it right. Like, we were not created. We're not meant to do life alone. We're meant to do it in community. As comfortable as it may be sometimes to be alone and be in isolation, we're not meant to. And the good news is we don't have to. You know, and there's lots of different types of churches. I think one of the things that, you know, organizations like the American Association of Christian Counselors, the Biblical Counseling Coalition, one of the things that I've seen these organizations help with, I say the Biblical Counseling Coalition because they've helped us before to help plant people in churches that didn't have churches. And it's just, if you can't find a church in your community, reach out to one of these organizations and say, hey, I live in this community and I need a church. Even Mighty Oaks, that's not what we do for mission, but I can promise you, somebody calls and says, I live in this area and I don't have a church. Somebody on the phone is going to help you find a church. And get online and look at churches and see, you know, does this match like the kind of environment I want to be in? Walk in and shake somebody's hand and say hello and make a friend. That initial introduction, as uncomfortable as it may be the first intentional step that you could take. Maybe your New Year's resolution, make a friend, join a community. I want to be part of a community. And that'll open up into that social pillar, which is a completely essential for holistic health. You have to be around. You're created to be around community. And as difficult as it may be, as uncomfortable as it may feel for you, you have to have that.
Make a friend. It's so true. Make a friend. Let somebody in. Build a community and recognize that you are not meant or created to do this life alone. Vulnerability is not a weakness, my friend. Vulnerability is a strength. Chad, my friend, again, from all of us here at Life, Love, Faith, and Family, on behalf of my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, and myself, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us. We love and appreciate you, my friend.
Love you guys, man. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
If someone in your family has depression or anxiety, it's hard to know what to do. We went through that. I'm Sam. The center is a place of hope. Lives are being healed. God is changing families.
Coming to the center, it's just life-altering. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my family.
Struggling to keep it all together, or no one knows, or you're hiding things, or you feel like you've hit some crisis.
It's amazing to think that there could be so much change.
Man, I'm so grateful for the center. It's so helpful for me, and I'm so hopeful.
The center, a place of hope. Call today. a lot of people are surprised that insurance can help cover this.
Dive in, give yourself all to it. Watch what happens.
Call the Center, A Place of Hope, right now.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, A Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, A Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.